Media network of local radio stations here for you.
Have a lot of information, and who does it belong to exactly is going to be the topic for today. My question to you is, do you, all else being equal, trust or distrust the U.S. intelligence community? Do you have an understanding about how it is that they gather intelligence? What the legal parameters are that govern how our intelligence agencies, which, by the way, there's like 40 of them. I'm not even going to try to list them all. There are like some subdivisions of the EPA and that deal with all manner of intelligence gathering. There are all sorts of different ways that information is shared and also not shared and compartmentalized. But I'm talking about the ones that we all are familiar with, like the National Security Agency. So the NSA, the CIA, the FBI. Do you think that Americans, do you specifically have an understanding of how they gather intelligence? And do you feel comfortable with how U.S. intelligence agencies gather intelligence? 844-967-2789. And I'm asking the question this way because for a while now, one of my longtime callers, and again, if you want to call in, first-time callers, conservatives, women, you go right to the front of the line, 844-967-2789. Do you trust the U.S. intelligence communities and how they gather intelligence? One of my long-term callers has constantly been sort of talking about and referring back to both the Durham report, and yesterday reference was made to 51 intelligence officials whom, according to this caller, my good friend CJ, betrayed their oath. And so it got me thinking, not only who are these 51 people and what exactly was he talking about, and we'll get into all that, but fundamentally, it seems to me that partisanship around do we trust the intelligence agencies and what party is seen as more hawkish or less hawkish has gotten completely inverted. Do you perceive that as well? Here's what I mean by that. So I was in law school when 9/11 happened. And in fact, had just been in New York City in the downtown area the Thursday before the Tuesday that was that terrible terrorist attack on the United States in downtown New York City. Was interviewing at law firms, was walking around right around the towers. And the reaction after 9/11 was, let's provide more surveillance powers to these agencies. And here's a little news quiz, little history quiz for you, Anya. When the Patriot Act was passed, it passed nearly unanimously. Senator Clinton voted for it at the time. Do you know the one senator that didn't vote for this thing?
Oh, do I? Me?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. I think I was still in diapers when this passed, so I wouldn't
have. We'll give you a pass. What, you weren't like sucking up all manner of, you know, domestic intelligence policy in diapers.
Yeah. My understanding is when 9/11 happened, my mom did face my crib towards the TV. So I absorbed something, I think, of that day, but
osmotically,
not the senators who voted for such things after, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the Patriot Act passed with 99 senators voting for it. And one senator voted against it. And that senator was Russ Feingold from the state of Wisconsin.
Ah, okay. There's a name I know.
Yes. And so my general frame when it comes to intelligence and intelligence gathering is this. What we have here are two values. And I often try to root our debates in values. Right? And the two values I see here are our civil liberties and our right to be free from government surveillance. That's a value on one hand, and I think most Americans treasure that, both Democrats and conservatives. And on the other hand is our national security, because at some level, governments could surveil nearly everybody for everything, right? They could actually scrape the data, and it's not a question of can they, it's do they then have effectively both the man and computer power to be culling through all of this terabytes of data every day, right? That's really what intelligence, in many regards, has become about. How do you cull the enormity of the data, and who gets to decide whose data you get to capture and when? So back then, especially being in law school, a lot of the more liberal or progressive thinkers within the law were deeply concerned about the powers that were given to the federal government, law enforcement, and intelligence agencies following 9/11. One of those things with a Foreign Intelligence Security Act warrant, they're called FISA warrants. These are basically these secret courts. There's Foreign Intelligence Security Courts that were created, and these freaked legal scholars out because the nature of the information that was used to get FISA warrants was not public. It's not like you could go read a case about it. The whole thing is concealed and secret. The courts, what judges sit on them, how they've ruled on warrants, who reviews the warrants after the fact. So we created effectively a closed system where we don't know which watchers are watching the watchers at what point in time. That's always been deeply concerning to a lot of civil libertarians. So fast forward to today in 2023, and we seem to have come to this moment where now it's the GOP that's attacking FISA warrants, and specifically this thing called Rule 702. And what's really interesting here is that who's right here, right? Were Democrats wrong post 9/11? And not just Democrats, 99% of them voted for it, right? Except for Russ. It was a little bit more divided in the House. But what do you trust America's intelligence communities? Do you think there should be more reporting? Do we simply not have a good collective understanding of these things? How important is this to you? 844-967-2789. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Network. You can always join us. Call or text 844-967-2789. But you can always go get that app, and then it's oh so much easier. But to me, I think there's a couple things that I want to observe here. I don't think it is appropriate for political parties to politicize the questions surrounding intelligence capabilities. In other words, when these questions that very, very importantly and directly strike upon the principles that we hold sacred within democracies, and that is basically freedom from government intervention, except with just and due cause, heard before a court, reviewable by another court, challengeable by the subject of that warrant ultimately. Do we feel comfortable that we understand what our rights are and what we can expect and what the reporting is from our government? And how concerned should we be that this is now being politicized? So I will remind us all that, yes, in the wake of 9/11, there were civil libertarians in the ACLU especially that were sounding an alarm very loudly and repeatedly. Interest groups that advocated for oppressed people or communities, like the NAACP, also expressed concerns because a power once granted to the government in terms of intelligence capabilities is very difficult to call back. And over time, the use of those powers expands. It's just their scope creep. They eventually expand beyond simply combating terrorism, as we all were righteously afraid of and angered by following the wake of 9/11. And that those powers would be used to surveil black and brown communities, or queer communities, or women's groups, or political opposition, right? Like, this is the concern within democracies. But despite the fact that there were many stakeholder groups that sounded the alarm back in 2001, politicians did not raise the question. Russ Feingold was the cheese from Wisconsin standing alone. And has Russ's his concerns been proven right? Now, I can be disgusted by Jim Jordan's performative shirt sleeves routine in these House committees, but I find it astounding, quite a turnabout, that now we have Jim Jordan, sort of Republican flunky extraordinaire, and he's on the House floor assailing really critical elements of the Patriot Act, challenging and debating the value of FISA warrants and Rule 702. The difference between the two I'll explain after the break. But man, what's going on here? Has up become down? Is left right? What does all of this mean? How do we find our way in this? Well, I hope today to do that a bit with you. You can join me. Pose questions. I might not know the answers to all of them because this stuff's complex. But we can at least begin to have these discussions. Because while I fervently disagree with my good friend CJ's perspectives on this, I think the questions themselves deserve answers. So let's do this together when we get back. 844-967-2789. Join me, Maggie Dawn, your host here on The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's 844-967-2789.
AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Everybody. Do we have enough of an understanding about how the intelligence community gathers intelligence and who watches the watchers? Or are we just relegated to relying on Jim Jordan and CJ to tell us we've got a problem? This fundamentally, I'll just say this, has been one area of both the law and policy that has been the hardest for me ever to come to a clear judgment about. I feel ill-equipped to opine, but I know that the security concerns are real, and yet I know the civil liberty concerns are just as real. So I'm humbled by this one, and I ask you, you know, where are you sitting? What do you think our general understanding is? Should we be demanding more accountability Do you trust the intelligence community? And from Watertown, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you, my friend?
Oh, this is definitely one of my pet peeves. I don't know if any others did, but I know that wild liberal Trent Lott did come out and say, gee, Russ Feingold was right. This is, you know, this Patriot Act was a little too severe, something like that, you know. But, you know, and think that we replaced Russ Feingold with this Russian agent guy, you know, it's like, I don't know, but yeah, it is a complex thing, and it was not, I mean, they don't have hearings. They don't go back and forth. Nobody changes their mind. Nobody listens to, oh, gee, I never thought of that. No.
Right. And one of the concerns I have, does it concern you too, Anne, is that once the information is scraped, right, like once an intelligence, part of the intelligence apparatus is surveilling you, one, how do you ever know about it? And two, there's no redress for the harm, right? It's, they've taken your information, you don't know about it, and, oh, by the way, there's nothing you can do about it to make it right. It's not like they can unlearn it.
Oh, and you still we follow along with some of these shenanigans going on within domestic terrorism and whatever, you know, where there were, you know, ladies who were like, oh, yes, that's a good cause. I'll send it home to my Arab country, send them some money. And they, you know, people like that thrown in jail and pursued and attacked. We've got people supporting terrorism.
Yeah, it's thanks for your call, Ann. Oops, thanks for your call, Ann. And I'll just summarize Ann's point here. Boy, doesn't this seem like a basket of contradictions. Lori from Robinson, Illinois, I'm sorry I missed you. Do feel free to call back. That's quite all right. You go right to the front of the line, Lori, 844-967-2789. A basket of contradictions. Trent Lott saying that Russ Feingold got it right. Like, push me over with a feather. I never thought I'd ever hear something like that. The domestic terrorists were now more concerned about their civil liberties than we ever were about black folks. I mean, this is my point, that somewhere in all of this insanity, we have to start to acknowledge and root ourselves within some values and acknowledging that these things aren't all good or bad, that there are incredible amounts of gray that occur. And that, much like we were talking about yesterday, that these shades of gray and how these judgments are made by people that are assigned these duties and agree to take them on, boy, those are human beings exercising oftentimes subjective judgments based on experience. And how do we all collectively hold them accountable? I'm not sure that we have been. And so what is there to learn? And who were these 51 intelligence officials? What is there to learn from this current moment? Some on the right trumpeting the Durham report. Those on the left pointing to Robert Mueller. What distinguishes those particular investigations? By the way, the one was an investigation of the other investigation. And can there be any mooring in fact? I think there can be. I think that we can stack these reports up right next to each other and gain some insight. So when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about what I think is the single most important difference between the Mueller report and the Durham report, other than the abundantly obvious, which is, one drew some pretty clear conclusions, and the other one amounted to processes recommendations. Important processes recommendations, but it eventually was about processes. So, keep it locked in. The last segment of the day, I just want to cue this up right now to get people thinking. Because if Jim Jordan and Trent Lott are willing to question the intelligence community on a federal level, I certainly hope that they are willing to require the same level of auditing, inquiry, and accountability in our local police departments. And I want to talk about, in our last segment, whether or not you personally now record your interactions with police officers, because that is now a whole subgenre of YouTube, and they're called First Amendment auditors. So we'll probably start that in this next segment and definitely take calls on it in our last segment, 844-967-2789. Do you now record cops? And I'll finish breaking down the Mueller and Durham reports, you know, in just a couple of minutes when, once we get back. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Trying to unpack a big thorny one this afternoon, you know, just a little light afternoon discussion, which is, do we have a problem with the intelligence communities in the United States? Are they accountable enough? Does the general public understand enough? What are the questions that we should be asking? Should these questions ever be political? Not sure. I would suggest that no, these are the last sorts of questions that should be politicized. And they are the first and most important questions for any democracy in the current age. Joanne from Madison, thank you for joining the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you this afternoon?
Great show. We've got some real problems with the three-letter agencies and all of that in terms of collecting information, but those folks aren't the real brainiacs. The real brainiacs are at the Googles and the Amazons and the Microsofts, and those folks are collecting information at levels that we can't even imagine. The folks from X, for example, which used to be Twitter, and the interactions between those three letter agencies and those high-tech organizations are what we really have to worry about, which includes censorship as well, which includes clearing out information that we should be able to get a hold of. So again, you just raised so many interesting issues, and the fact that some right-wingers occasionally, you know, stop clocks or write twice a day, some of those right-wingers occasionally trip over an issue and do a good job on it, I'm happy for it. Any light, any sunshine is a good thing.
Thanks for the call, Joanne. And she couldn't be more right. You know, there was a crazily written, totally incendiary federal court decision that was issued on, I believe it was actually July 4th, and somebody can fact check me, 844-967-2789 if I get this wrong, I believe issued on July 1st, that called the Trump administration's current discussions, I believe specifically with, I want to say Meta, with Facebook, about misinformation and disinformation, the greatest threat to free speech in the history of the United States. Well, that was an exaggeration. But what Joanne points out and what we have to step back from and put down our partisanship on is precisely the interactions and the information sharing that occur between these massive, what I'm going to call data businesses. Okay? That's what Google and Amazon and X and Meta, those are data businesses. Their interactions with the government, boy, that sure matters. We had a text come in from Jeff in, where was Jeff from?
Jeff is from Shorewood.
And this one I loved. Here's Jeff on the whole topic, how we find ourselves.
We do have to censor it so slightly.
Yes, yes, yes. I won't alert the FCC with this one. Yes, but Jeff from Shorewood said this. Look, clowns like CJ never complained about FISA until their guys got caught up in it, end quote. Yes, and I think sometimes it takes these moments where the rich and privileged, right, or your guys or the people that are on your team, all of a sudden feel the invasion, the breaching of civil liberties, when all of a sudden someone you know comes to you and says, I'm transgender. Maybe then it breaks through, right? When it is within your household, your loved ones, when someone you know is railroaded or overcharged with a crime, right? That's when we start asking these questions. But like Joanne, I just want to get there. I just want to ask the question. Can we have those kinds of discussions? I want to be sure. Here we go. Jim from Appleton also texting in. The Patriot Act is the most unpatriotic piece of legislation ever passed. There should have been much more visibility. If it requires secrecy to start the investigation, once it is done, open it up for accountability. I couldn't agree with you more. Listen, when you legislate in moments of mass fear, grief, in mass trauma, right? When you legislate in those moments, I'll guarantee you, not all of it's going to be good. And I think maybe this moment, if there's one spot where I could see liberals and conservatives and Democrats and Republicans coming together and trying to breach this gap, is go ahead and back the badge. But don't back the badge on one hand and then tear down the FBI on the other. It's all law enforcement. It's all power of the state. There's only basically two groups of people on the planet that are legally authorized to kill. It's police forces and militaries. And the intelligence community is a piece of our overall military and foreign policy strategy. It has to matter to us. And it has to matter in both spheres equally. We can't claim to care about civil liberties only when they are ours. We can't claim to care about civil liberties only when the warrant was issued under FISA. Chris, I'm sorry I missed you, buddy. If you want to, call right back and I'll put you up first. 844-967-2789. Mark from the SAC, take a crack at it, my friend. This is a big one today.
It's a big one. And I think the reason that some of on the right are so concerned about it is you know, that Donald Trump got caught in the crosshairs of the intelligence community. But I mean that if part of the problem was that Trump was not being quite as circumspect as he should have been, and there was, you know, warning signs. You know, he did have connections with foreign governments, getting money from foreign sources, and all this. So that's something that is concerning, and it's something that probably formed the basis of some of the investigations into his behaviors, and that I think that's the only reason they're concerned about it, because Donald Trump is you got caught, and that and perhaps there should be some fine tuning there. But you know, back in the days when you hear something's going on, if you hear, you know, somebody's talking smart in the bar, is, you know, I can't remember the guy's name, was supposedly talking smart about how Donald Trump was looking for ways to connect with the Russians and all this prior to the election. Yeah. That's something.
Was that Papadopoulos? I think that was Papadopoulos. That low hanging fruit. Yes.
Yeah, and it's something that if you get a clue that something's going on, you have to look into it. I mean, that's what I found as an auditor. If somebody, I saw something was wrong, I had to dig deeper into the audit. And it just says, this is what happened. But I mean that, and for the same people that are screaming about civil liberties, what about Hunter Biden's civil liberties when they, you know, took his laptop that had been under his control for how many months or years, and they're using that as evidence against him? I mean, that I don't see them talking about Hunter Biden's civil liberties being violated.
Yeah, I think, Mark, you got a whole lot there. Thanks for the call, buddy. Really good to hear your voice. Let me start with this. There is a huge, hugely important intersection that is happening right now, which is making these things of such acute importance. And these things, I mean, by that I mean how we're going to regulate, or if we're going to regulate, data companies, the social media, the tech firms. Are we actually going to regulate how they use and monetize and collect our data? That is a question that also relates to how are those companies interacting with and affecting our political processes, right? Cambridge Analytica basically proved the fact that you can manipulate millions of people into thinking certain things by having the best data on them available, and then by just basically blanketing everything that they see, hear, and read with propaganda. And Russia realized that, oh my gosh, yes, Americans, boy, short attention span theater here. Click, 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 click. They realized that they can use comprobot or misinformation. And by the way, misinformation is not, you know, the most outrageous lie. Misinformation always comes in the form of something that is clearly plausible, mixed in with very true facts. This is the problem with Hunter Biden's laptop. Nobody can prove its provenance. So yes, there is information on there that clearly was Hunter Biden's. Like the pictures, the video that Marjorie Taylor Greene thought were appropriate for the House floor. They weren't. So yeah, that might be very much Hunter Biden, but there, the other stuff in there you cannot verify, because always the misinformation is the lie buried within the truth. And so we have this confluence of Americans, frankly, just copping out. I hate to say it, but like, get smart would be the theme, I guess, the takeaway, which is like, we have a responsibility to read things. I revisited the Durham report today. I revisited and figured out who the 51 people are. Here's the brief. And I got to do the timeline. And on October 14th, 2020, the New York Post publishes a story about the Hunter Biden laptop. Okay, New York Post, owned by Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News, who said that Trump lost, and that came later. And, oh, was this the October surprise? Right? The October surprise means the crap that's dumped less than a month before the election to torpedo your opponent. And like magically, the New York Post happens upon Hunter Biden's laptop, provided conveniently by Rudy Giuliani, who has now admitted in court papers that he is indeed a liar. And oh, by the way, the guy at the computer tech store was supposed to be getting repaired or was abandoned, unsure. He's not sure whether like Rudy gave it to him. Or wait, did the FBI come and ask for it? Or did I call Rudy? Yet never really clear about that. But of course, no one can prove what on there was real to begin with versus added later. And how exactly does Hunter Biden, with his porno that he recorded while he was on a drug binge, how does he just like, you know, oh, I'll just drop that off at the computer store there, like the dry cleaner, and then forget about it? Right? That's the, okay, that's that. Within days, the New York Times is reporting, and by the way, this is true to this day, all of the New York Post reporting on Hunter Biden and his laptop, there's no byline. They're all op-eds. Well, the New York Times reports, days after this comes out in 2020, less than a month before the November election, the New York Times comes out and says people in the New York Post newsrooms, that even these people, these journalists, were like, this is a bridge too far. We can't verify this. Meaning they can't triple check it with someone who would have direct knowledge of the veracity of the information that they're reporting. And then on October 19th, 51 intelligence chiefs send a letter, an open letter, basically saying that the information and how it came about and what's being claimed about what's on this laptop, yes, this seems like Russian disinformation. And by the way, the list of folks that signed that included, like, I don't know, 10 former Trump intelligence officials. So all of this ends up intersecting, of course, ultimately, with the Durham report, which was just finally released this past May. And I promised to tell you the difference between the Durham report and the Mueller report. And here it is. The Durham report came out after the Inspector General for the FBI issued a report saying he could find no direct evidence that Operation Crossfire Hurricane, which was the investigation into the Trump-Russia potential, you know, illegal coordination to help him during the campaign, Crossfire Hurricane, that there was no active direct bias involved in how that investigation came to be, that there were errors in judgment, that there were procedures and processes that weren't fired, but the Inspector General said, yeah, nobody here was committing any crime. They might have screwed up on their jobs, but it wasn't criminal. So then Bill Barr has Durham go back out to reinvestigate all of that. So the outcome of that was not much. Here's the difference between the Durham report and the Mueller report. Durham was asked by Barr to investigate crimes, but Durham ended up providing an audit of the FBI's Rule 702 and FISA procedures. That wasn't his job. On the other hand, Mueller's report was precisely supposed to just investigate potential crimes, and that's what he did. One did his job. The other one on a political mission. I'm Maggie Dawn. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow with another episode.
This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Jesus died for somebody's sins, but not mine. Pot of thieves. Wild
card. Welcome back, everybody. Listen, that was the quickest 24-hour period before I started a new show in the history of all radio. I hope you all stayed listening. I just get so excited about this stuff and about the big questions that all of this portends. And I thought we were out of time, but blessedly we are not. You can always join our conversation, 844-967-2789. If we don't get to the First Amendment auditors, the folks that have been taping encounters with local police, we will do that tomorrow. So don't you worry. If you want to get in on this topic, we still have time. Text or call. Jeff, thanks for your feedback. Jeff asks in response to my comments about regulating big tech and big data, aren't those horses out of the barn? Well, yes, they are, but that never really prevents the regulation of the use of the data that they might already be scraping. A really brilliant friend of mine who happens also to have a radio show on this network, Dominic Salvia, whom you can hear every day from 4 to 6 on the Devil's Advocates, suggested this basic principle to me, and I thought, well, damn, that makes a lot of sense. And his suggestion was, aren't every single one of our clicks and the biometrics with our Fitbits and all of this stuff, isn't all of that our property? Our own personal intellectual property. It's our digital thumbprint. It tells these companies exactly who we are, where we are, what we're thinking, our innermost desires, our political leanings. If our parents were divorced or married, if we prefer the color blue to green, if we like vanilla or chocolate ice cream, by the way, happy National Custard Day, everybody. Isn't that our property? I would argue yes, and we need to start regulating the use of the information. I don't think we can ever keep these companies from scraping it, but maybe we can start to think about how it's used, which brings me back to whence we began, which is how are intelligence agencies gathering our data and using it? How are they interacting, collaborating, or conspiring, if it were, with the big data companies? By the way, Chris, thanks for your shout-out text. I appreciate that. Dana from La Crosse, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What say you?
Hey, Maggie. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I think that's twice now that you've thought your show was over when it wasn't. So I think we need to get you a bigger clock or something. I don't know. Hey, I do agree on the collection of data stuff. I think I have something to say about Hunter too, but I think fine, if a company wants to collect it for their own internal marketing use, that's one thing, but the minute they start selling it and stuff like that, I got a real problem with that. In fact, it really pisses me off, actually. But over to Hunter, though, and the information misinformation campaign. I think it was on Tom Hartman a couple of weeks ago. I was at work, so I didn't catch it all. But I believe he was commenting on a report that what is believed is that Hunter's info, whatever they got of Hunter, his pics and stuff like that, they got out of his cloud. And then the Russians did. And somehow managed to get that on a computer, over to the laptop, over to Rudy, all that stuff. Like I said, I didn't really catch it all. But
Rudy Giuliani, the admitted liar, friend of Lev Parnas and other Russian operatives. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
that certainly sounds highly plausible. Yes. Believable. I forget the name of the report that you are referring to, but there have been numerous sources that have indicated, not just including the 51 intelligence officers, that have said the manner in which the information appeared, the sort of information that was on the laptop, does seem to be very along the lines of the sort of hacking that Russians are able to do, as well as this typical comprobot or misinformation and disinformation getting sprinkled in. So it was on both of those axes. And I wanted to thank you for pointing that out. Go ahead, Dana.
Sure. So I was saying, you know, I don't really keep up on the Hunter story that much because, you know, if something really does happen, I figure the real media is going to cover it. And the only thing we're hearing is from right-wingers. And through my experience of my history of researching the internet and how it works and the propaganda machine, I don't ever believe a word that comes strictly out of the right. I wait till I hear from it on the mainstream. I know CJ's got something to say about that, but sorry, CJ, but the mainstream media is there to inform, if you want to call it the mainstream media. There's a lot of stuff they do leave out, and if they did report on all of it, we'd know a lot more about your side, CJ. So you have a great night, baby. Thank you.
You too, Dana. Thanks. And I'm going to work on getting better at this radio thing. I think maybe some of you know that I'm basically a newbie at this, so I always appreciate your patience as I struggle to get better. If you want to get in on these last few minutes that we have, 844-967-2789. So Dana made a really good point, and I said this to a good friend of mine the other day. I said, okay, Mueller report does its job, sticks to whether or not a crime was committed. Durham report does a process audit, but doesn't follow audit procedures. At the end of the day, who is lining up to defend these people, meaning Joe Biden and Donald Trump? Who are they? Who's admitted to being liars? Who's been proven to be liars on numerous occasions? What I'm talking about is the baseline between differences of opinion of professionals who have participated in the various investigations related to Joe Biden. And the fact that there is a set of documentary and testimonial evidence that will be put forward under penalty of perjury and tested in the U.S. criminal justice system as to Donald Trump. Those two facts, plus look at the clown show that is lining up in support of Donald Trump versus all of the experts and some of Donald Trump's own loyalists who are standing now to say these allegations against Joe Biden simply are not backed by evidence. I've just got a minute. I don't want to be fidelious to our texters. Jeff points out Facebook is free because we pay him.
Just to be clear, I don't think that one was from Jeff. That's one of our unnamed texters.
Unnamed texters. You got to tell me when it's a Facebook is free. Yes, because we pay them with our data. Yes, that is certainly true. But regulation is a system that allocates costs and prices in a certain way. So let's figure out how much our privacy is worth, shall we? Listen, it's been a great day on the Maggie Dawn Show. And now I'll actually talk to you tomorrow. Come back and join Anya and I, and we'll tackle that big First Amendment auditor question. Do you record the cops? Tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show. It's been real. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network.